Well, Boston's gay pride movement turned 40 over the weekend. In a state that went from 300 years of English puritanical morality to 100 years of Irish Catholic morality to being the first in the nation to recognize gay marriage, it's clear what a dramatic impact that movement has had. Today, pride is a mainstream event covered by the mainstream press and attended by mainstream politicians. So does that make it, and Massachusetts itself, post-gay? Join us with your thoughts at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us online at wbur.org/Boston. And we'll start today with Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. He went down to the Pride Parade this weekend to take us a look at where LGBT society sits in Boston today. On the Savage
Mobcast. It's June. And everybody knows that June is Gay Pride Month. So
syndicated advice columnist and frequent This American Life contributor Dan Savage is ambivalent about Pride, but he definitely does not love the parades.
They just feel so sort of flaccid and uninspired.
Savage is gay, though he often rails against what he calls the gay establishment. On a recent installment of his popular podcast, Savage knocked Pride parades as dour, antagonistic relics of a civil rights battle that has, in large measure, been won. He called for a new kind of parade.
That's a big party, and it's really fun, and it's at night, and straight people want to come watch because it's crazy, and the gays are fun, and a part of the city's, a part of the life of the city.
So, with Savage's tirade queued on my iPod, I set off down Tremont Street to check out our Pride Parade.
I do love me some Boston Pride. 40 years.
Started off, as usual, with the roar of lesbian bikers. And then came the politicians. Protocol dictates Mayor Menino marches first, then Governor Patrick.
Hey, hey! Ho, ho! Patrick Murray's the way to go!
But with that out of the way, it was time to dance. And then with the dancing out of the way, it was time for more politics. With an ebb and flow that was no doubt by design, the parade alternated between the ebullient party ethos that Dan Savage espoused to more sober political messaging, sometimes in the same sentence.
Yay! I love you! Support trans rights!
I think we have made incredible strides as a community, and then I look at things like, you know, transgender equality and kids being bullied in school still, and obviously we still have a ways to go, which is why we're here tonight to start talking about what else we need to do for the future.
Two nights before the parade, Boston Pride Deputy Director Carrie Alita hosted a panel discussion in the theater district called Riots to Rights, celebrating 40 years of progress. Progress definitely being the key word there. Panelist and longtime Boston GLBT activist Don Gorton has a face that says he really can hardly believe how far things have come, especially in this city.
We can live wherever we want now. It used to be we were confined to ghettos. We still have the South End. We still have Jamaica Plain. You can still see visible gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender life in those neighborhoods. But you don't have to live in the ghetto to be out and proud. You can live wherever you want.
And it's a good thing, too, because probably only a tiny number of those parade goers would actually be able to afford the South End anymore. Whether by integration or gentrification, much of Boston's LGBT population has dispersed. And while most people you talk to at Pride celebrate the extent to which they've been welcomed by the broader region, some worry that their community may be getting spread too thin. Again, Pride organizer Carrie Alita.
You know, I think assimilation in a way is part of our goal. We just want to be like everybody else. But at the same time, there is a risk that you lose your kind of cultural identity.
For me, when it comes to unifying a community, what I see now is elements of what a community is.
Youth activist Connor Lipschitz spoke at the Riots to Rights panel.
I'm turning 21 in December, and one thing that I'm looking very much forward to is going to a bar. But can anybody in here name exactly how many gay bars we have in Boston? Thank you. It's minimal.
Here's a little experiment you can do at home. There are a few mobile apps out there that'll map all of the LGBT-oriented establishments around you. Bars, for instance, might be marked with red dots. So download an app and enter your location as San Francisco. You'll see a big fat red line running down Castro Street. Enter Washington, D.C., and you'll get a big blob of red east of DuPont Circle. There's a similar splotch on Seattle's Capitol Hill. All historically gay neighborhoods that remain gay within broader gay-friendly cities. Now enter your location as Boston. You'll see a loose clump of red in the South End, the Theater District, Back Bay, but it's a pretty bare map with no obvious concentration. So what does that mean?
There is an assumption that we are in a post-gay era and LGBT people in Boston no longer need their own spaces.
On a back porch in Cambridgeport, 26-year-old Daniel Heller holds court with his friends as they pregame for a big night out.
And forgive me, just to make sure, gay, gay, straight, 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 straight.
Yep. Just kind of hoping you'd switch out of my head.
Daniel is gay, and he loves his straight friends, but about 3 years ago, he started feeling like he didn't have a place to meet people. Boston was, in some people's estimation, becoming a post-gay city, where gays and straights were so amicably integrated that there remained little need for separate bar scenes.
This notion of post-gay was not working. We were not there yet. You're still, a bunch of Jews over here, right? And we're still not being introduced to same-sex partners at synagogue, right? We have to go to gay bars to meet them.
Finding Boston's few remaining gay bars sorely lacking, Daniel started up a Boston chapter of a movement called Guerrilla Queer Bar. Once or twice a month, with some degree of stealth, Daniel organizes hundreds upon hundreds of people to show up at a regular bar and, by force of numbers, make it into a gay bar. Tonight's target is a bit of an unlikely choice.
This one was like, "Hi, this is Ashley. You've reached the Hard Rock Cafe. How may I rock your world?" And I was like, whoa.
It sounds more radical than it is because the Hard Rock actually welcomed Daniel and his group into their backroom dance hall. Inside, it was hopping.
So do you come here often?
Worst pickup line ever, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I've come to a couple of these, thank you for asking.
Robert doesn't want to be called by his full name because he's a school teacher, but he says Guerrilla Queer Bar is filling a telling niche in Boston.
Well, I think there's so much equality and there's so much liberalism that because people don't have to fight for anything anymore, they've kind of blended in and there's no identity any longer. And I think it's deeply problematic for people who are 21 to 25 who are not necessarily ready to enjoy the absolutely appropriate legal marriage and adopt kids and go to Whole Foods. Like, we're not all that. We need something else.
Perhaps it's that persistent need for something else that propels a movement like Boston Pride. But it's a movement that might soon have to grapple with the question, how much integration is too much?
That question posed by Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. So listeners, how about it? Has Boston entered a post-gay era? Is such a thing possible or even desirable? What does it mean that there isn't so much of a gay ghetto in Boston anymore? Does the city's LGBT community risk diluting its political power if it integrates too seamlessly into the mainstream? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining me now in the studio is Arlene Isaacson, longtime veteran of the LGBT rights movement in Boston and former head of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Welcome to Radio Boston, Arlene.
Thank you. And current head.
And current head, I should say. Okay. Thank you so much for the correction there. I'll make sure not to make that same mistake twice. But before I go on, let me also introduce Pierce Durkin. He perhaps is representing the next generation of LGBT leadership in Boston because he's currently on the board of directors of Boston Pride, and he's helped put Pride together since 2003. Welcome to Radio Boston, Pierce.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Arlene, let me just start by asking you. Adam Ragusea kind of poses this very interesting question about how much integration is a good thing or how much is too much. So in your mind, I guess, straightforward, how normalized has being gay become in Eastern Massachusetts?
It's a very good question. It's one that the GLBT community is beginning to debate more heatedly with each passing year. We are both very assimilated and not quite there yet at the same time. Those two can coexist. We're assimilated to the extent that we have now redistributed ourselves from the small enclaves in which we used to live, some of which you mentioned. There was a joke I used to make frequently 10 years ago. If I'd meet someone and they'd say they were a lesbian, I'd say, do you live in Somerville, Cambridge, or JP? And if you don't, then you're really not a lesbian. And the joke being that was pretty standard operating procedure back then. Gay men, it was similar, but not completely the same neighborhoods. You would throw in the South End for gay men. But over the last 10 to 20 years, we have slowly, and quite honestly, a lot of it is our gay brothers, have made headway in different, have moved into different neighborhoods. The Dorchesters and people who wanted to have kids and have families tended to move into out of JP and into Roslindale and West Roxbury and Hyde Park in numbers that completely changed the demographics and therefore completely changed the political expectations in a way that really helped us a lot.
It was helpful, so it didn't dilute the political expectations?
No. Interestingly, it helped us enormously because when legislators thought we all lived in Somerville, Cambridge, and JP, they could ignore us because we didn't live in their parts of the world. Suddenly, they realized that we were living in previously conservative West Roxbury, previously more conservative suburban enclaves, and they paid attention in a very different way.
I see. Pierce Durkin, let me ask you, on that note of sort of the concentration of political power, you remember that at the beginning of Adam's piece, Dan Savage says, you know, basically that pride parades should drop politics altogether and just be the fun mainstream party for LGBT and straight folks as well. Do you buy that?
No, I think that Pride is a place. It's like the gay celebration and GLBT celebration all across the board. We all come together. It's like our Christmas, our Hanukkah, our 4th of July. It's basically our holiday. So for everybody to come together and celebrate together, I mean, I think that the political side and the religious side and the youth side and the senior side, they can all come together at that one place and celebrate together. So I think that they won't end up like parting.
So do you agree or maybe disagree with Arlene Isaacson's contention that actually having a dispersion of what used to be concentrated neighborhoods of GLBT people has actually helped politically?
Yes, actually I do agree because I think she's absolutely right. When you go out and they start realizing that the voters are equally all throughout these largest areas and suburbs, that they are going to pay attention much more avidly.
Okay, so let me ask both of you flat out, is Boston, the greater Boston area, is it post-gay?
It's culturally become more post-gay to the extent that we can't point to gay neighborhoods anymore. All my friends who live in the South End talk about how it's been inundated with straight people from the suburbs who have retired and want to move to a hip place in the city. So they move in there, and it becomes less and less gay with each passing day as a result. So culturally, yes. Politically, no. No, politically, we have some serious challenges ahead, but people do tend to assume we're post-gay, and a lot of people think we pretty much won all the rights there are to be had and that we can move on because we are so there. But the fact of the matter is that's not the case at all.
Pierce, do you think Boston's become post-gay?
It's possible. I think that, you know, for a lot of people, they're beginning to feel so much more accepted that it's becoming a non-issue for a lot of people. So perhaps their feelings about those issues like the Don't Ask, Don't Tell and transgender rights, they're feeling that it's because it's so much accepted within the confines of Boston that it's making them less political.
There was a time when gay folks who wanted to have kids considered pretty much two or three communities, Brookline and Newton and maybe one or two others. Now they'll go to almost any suburb as long as it's a reasonably open-minded, reasonably liberal community.
Right.
That's new. Now there are still plenty of communities where people either wouldn't move to or they make jokes if they did, like, oh God, we're the only ones here. But the fact of the matter is even that is changing.
And the reason why I ask is because there probably are a lot of people out there who are listening to this thinking, anyone who thinks that basically any part of the United States, Boston included, if it is post-gay, you're kidding yourself, because that just makes you think that there aren't any battles left to be fought.
That's exactly right. And partly, you're speaking to an issue which is a real problem in the GLBT community, where there's a certain degree of complacency that we're beginning to suffer from, where people think, well, we went through this horrible battle over marriage. Having won it, we're there, and there's not much else to do. But the fact of the matter is that whether it's at the federal or the state level, there's plenty of battles that we still have left, not simply on transgender rights, so that's a big one that we're working on, but Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the right to ENDA, the right to not be discriminated against in employment, or DOMA, the right to have that marriage right at the federal level are all serious concerns for the GLBT community.
Well, there's a lot more we want to talk about after the break, but we got to take that break right now. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about whether or not Boston has become a post-gay city. This weekend was the 40th anniversary of Boston Pride. And you can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us in the studio is Arlene Isaacson. She is current head of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus and a longtime veteran of the LGBT rights movement in Massachusetts. Also with us is Pierce Durkin, member of the board of directors for Boston Pride. Thank you both for being here with us. Let's turn straight to the callers. Jean's calling from Quincy. Welcome to Radio Boston. Hello, Jean. Looks like we lost Jean. Let's go to Dorchester, where Matthew's calling. Welcome to Radio Boston, Matthew.
Hi, Meghna. I love your show, and I appreciate this topic. I just want to say I love my neighborhood of Dorchester, where gay folks are as welcome at the Blarney Stone and the Harp and Bard as they are at D-Bar and Ashmont Grill. But I wanted to say that... I do worry a little bit about those of us gay folks that have assimilated and are living, you know, comfortable, fairly privileged lives and have, you know, in various, wherever they may be. And I worry about complacency setting in because I do think that although things may seem post-gay, I do know that there are a number of virulently anti-gay organizations out there that are working every day politically to try to take away the you know, the benefits that we have developed over the years through political struggle and so forth. And I just want to echo what Arlene said a moment ago. I just think that you know, we need to be supporting groups like Mass Equality, like GLAAD, and so forth, because I think we can get very comfortable now that we mm-hmm. have achieved a certain amount of assimilation, and we can't get too comfortable because there are other forces out there who would like to see things reversed.
Matthew, thank you so much for your call. We're going to pick that up in just a second, but let's go to Jamaica Plain first, where Rachel is calling. Welcome to Radio Boston, Rachel.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, you know, as a queer person listening to this show, hearing sort of the irony in your opening piece about the teacher who went to Gorilla Bar and didn't want to give his last name mm-hmm. because he's a teacher, and that really shows that there's still a lot of homophobia in our community and our society. And that one of the big problems with assimilation is that, you know, for me, I'm a middle-class white person, and assimilating does make me safer and more comfortable, but that it really neglects other parts of our community, people who are in prison, you know, queer youth of color that are on the street. Assimilation does not help them, and so we need to be really politically active around those issues sort of continually.
So you see the work as not yet being done. Thank you so much for your call, Rachel. Arlene Isaacson, let me turn to you. We heard Matthew talk about complacency setting in.
That's a real problem for our community. My organization, the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, believes that one of the reasons that we lost Prop 8 in California is because they suffered from a severe bout of complacency, a belief that California was so pro-gay that they would never pass an anti-gay constitutional marriage amendment. And we thought that they could, and we thought that there was a time in Massachusetts not very long ago where it could happen here, and if the wrong campaign were run, it perhaps still could. So, yes, there's a lot of work to be done because, as your caller rightly pointed out, there's plenty of anti-gay organizations, and quite frankly, we have a newly elected senator who opposes us on all the major gay issues that are facing Congress. You know, Scott Brown is against us on the anti-discrimination bill ENDA, on DOMA, our right to marry at the federal level, on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and on. So we the fact that Ted Kennedy could be replaced by someone who is so strongly opposed to the gay community's issues is noteworthy and upsetting.
Do you think, and Pierce Durkin, I'd like to hear you on this too, that at the same time, maybe being quote-unquote post-gay is a sign that maybe the first wave of activism is done and things can get a little quieter before a second wave of civil rights push for GLBT communities should be undertaken? I mean, that was an initial argument when the gay marriage, the same-sex marriage battle started here in Massachusetts, that it was too much too soon.
You're absolutely right. I mean, they said that when we've tried to get the gay and lesbian civil rights bill passed in the 80s, and it took 17 years to do it. Cut to 20 years later, and the fight over marriage took us about 7 to 10 years to win. With each passing year, the battles will take less time, we believe, but we still have some ways to go.
Pierce Durkin, what is your thought about what people within the community are thinking? Like, is it a good thing or a bad thing to be post-gay and to maybe have those less obvious challenges, those less obvious hurdles to have to cross than maybe there were a generation ago?
I think about youth often when these questions come up, and I'm wondering whether the GLBT youth that are out there now, whether they think these issues are the same, or whether they are considering the last generation's issues are the same, or whether they're taking on a completely new approach to the issues that are there. Perhaps their opinions are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then also there's the ongoing issue of what being the gay rights movement here in the United States, how that resonates across the rest of the world. And I want to talk about that just for a second, because gay rights crusader Harvey Milk's nephew, Stuart Milk, was a celebrity marshal in Boston's Pride Parade on Saturday. And he spoke at that panel discussion in the theater district that we heard a little bit about. And he told a story about an email he got from a young man in Damascus, Syria.
Allow a ritual killing of himself by his family, which goes on in Islamic countries every day. But he heard that there was a community that was celebrating someone for no other reason than being a gay human rights activist. And he decided to leave home. So when you're out celebrating Pride, that message is resonating around the world.
Around the world, Boston and beyond. Let's sneak in a really quick call here from Jean. She's calling from Quincy. Welcome to Radio Boston, Jean.
Hi, Magna. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
You got just a couple seconds, Jean.
Yep. I just wanted to say that in places like Quincy, which is a working-class area, there's no such thing as post-gay. My partner and I are school teachers actually in a suburb of Boston. It's taken years for us to get accepted by our neighbors. And for myself, in today's parlance, I might be considered trans. I mean, I'm nearly 49 years old. I'm very low-key looking, like I said, I'm a school teacher. I still get stares in the supermarket. People aren't really sure, and we're really just trying to live our lives. When we did some work for mass equality, that community is really not open to gay marriage, and we can afford to live in Quincy. It's a great area in a lot of ways, but it's the fight is not quite yet over. And when we talked about having kids, we thought, what would it be like for if we had kids, which we decided not to. What would it be like for our kids to go to Quincy Public Schools? We weren't sure.
Jean, that's a great point, and obviously a lot of questions that many people in the community ask themselves. Arlene Isaacson, in the last 30 seconds we've got here, Boston may be post-gay, but not everywhere else.
No, there are some pockets of post-gaydom, if you will, but we've got a long ways to go.
And Pierce Durkin, last thought from you?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's so much to do, and there's, as Mr. Milk said, there's so much going on around the world. There's so much hatred against the gay community, the GLBT community, that we need to keep working on it very hardly.
And obviously there's possibly some disagreement within the community itself. But that's Pierce Durkin. He's member of the board of directors for Boston Pride, and we were also joined by Arlene Isaacson, head of the Massachusetts Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. Thank you so much to you both. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for some more Radio Boston.